And one of them is a race trailer. My son used to race in professional motorcycle racing, the Moto America series, things like that. We did that from the age of he started dirt bikes at like 8 years old, and we raced till he was 18, or we had 10, 11 years of it or something.
Wow.
He subsequently got out of it, and I was totally fine with it. I mean, my nerves couldn't take it anymore anyway. And so what I did was I restored and completely built out his final motorcycle, which is what you see in the background there. That was his final Moto America Super Sport race bike. It's a 2014 MV Agusta F3675. That's exactly what that is. So,
Wow, it's a beautiful bike.
it's got all the Corsa parts on it.
yeah, it's if I totaled it up, and I scare myself when I do this, but it's 40 grand to build one of these bikes, and we
Oh
had
yeah.
two.
Yeah, no, I have
So
my buddy's got a Ducati. He races for he does endurance racing. So they've raced Lamborghini. He won his category last year. And
oh, cool.
Lamborghini agreed to give him a new car, but the other thing that he has is a motorcycle. And he took me into his little store. It's an indoor carpeted room with his Ducati in there. Oh my.
Yeah, we hold these things in pretty high regard. I've got a couple of Ducatis, and I have a Moto Guzzi, which you don't see very often. And so yeah, we treasure them. But I mean, this is like my kids' rolling museum is what you're basically looking at. And it's got a brand new fresh engine in it. But it'll never run again. I'm not interested in that. I just want to have I'll have that carpeted room that you're speaking of, and that's where it'll end up.
Awesome.
So you mean it's just going to be sitting there for you to look at, and you're never going to start the engine up going, and you're never going to drive it around the
Well,
street or anything like that?
no, it's actually there for me and all you guys to look at now. So
Oh, wow. Very cool.
I built his bikes. So this when we last stopped riding, he had actually had some engine troubles with this bike, and so I tore it down and rebuilt it back to factory fresh. And then he wasn't really interested in racing anymore, and it was a seriously expensive endeavor as it was anyway. And I was okay with it. He did it for 10 years. He got out of it without serious injuries. And I was good. He learned a lot from it, from the experience, but
Yeah.
he's a great kid. He's a go-getter, and racing will teach you stuff like that.
You bet.
Well, that's really
Ernie,
cool.
are you
Anyway,
in?
let me interrupt you a little bit. Let me say hello to everybody who is
Yeah,
tuning in right
thanks.
now. Welcome
Yeah.
everybody to Thinking Out Loud with Friends. Today's we're calling it what? You've got to be kidding me. So there's the title of the show. So now
This
you know where it comes
is
from. You got to be kidding
199,
me.
Jan.
199.
199.
I can't believe it. When we started this and COVID, I never thought it would last, as long as it has, but it's one of my avocations and I love it. And even though I have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to join you guys at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I hate daylight savings time. Ah, anyway, going on with just remember everything you hear today is an opinion. We have a new guest today, a new member on the panel, Bernie Broderick. And Bernie, you can introduce yourself or not, and then we'll talk about what we want to talk about. I believe I don't want to blow your intro because
No, there's no
I've only
intro.
heard
There's no
amazing things
spoilers.
about you.
There's no spoilers. There's no spoilers. No, I mean, I've been working around this industry for quite a few.
Uh-oh, we got muted here. He got muted somehow. That's one of the problems with using the iPhone.
Are you there, Bernie? You're
Yeah,
muted. If
Bernie,
you
we
can hear
lost
me,
Bernie's
Bernie,
audio.
you just got muted.
Yeah, and it's probably your AirPods, probably just lost their battery, I guess.
So what I did, Bernie, I just had the same issue. I don't know if you're on a computer or on an iPad, but I touched my own video and then I muted myself and then unmuted myself and that got me back. Oh, now he's
Now
muted.
he's muted.
Let's unmute. And working any better? Nope, doesn't look like
Okay,
it.
so what's happened, what's probably happened is he's lost his Bluetooth connection with the AirPods on the computer. That's what you should look into, and I'm sure you'll come back in with us at any moment in time. Well, while we're waiting for Bernie, let me just keep going on and saying, hey, so everything you hear today is an opinion. Make sure you do your own research. You're more than welcome to join us. I highly recommend that anybody on the panel tags themselves on the show on either Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn, and we'll take it from there. Today, I got amazing news, and I did not know this, but our YouTube stats, we have 1,200 views of 30 minutes. That's blowing my mind. And then on the activity aspect, last week on LinkedIn, we had 336 impressions of the show. And we have now 3,356 followers. And you know what the most amazing part is? Not one comment. Not a comment. Nobody says anything. So what's going on out there with you
people? AI.
You
know?
Unbelievable. No comments. You know, be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. You know. Now, so, Bernie, are you back? Can we hear you now?
No.
No. I don't know what kind of computer you're on, but whatever it is, what I would do is shut your shut the Bluetooth off, and go to the if you're on a Mac, use the Mac microphone. That's what I would do. Shut the Bluetooth off, and just use the or take your AirPods out. AirPods out and put them back in the case.
Take the iPad out of your ear and place the.
Oh, if you're on an iPad, you can use the iPad speaker. speaker and the microphone will be fine. That's what Greg does, right, Greg? All right.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Bears again. What the hell's going on around here, you know? So. Anyway, I just wanted to report, you know, coming from Las Vegas the way I do, Steve Lawrence died at 88. You know, him and Edie Gourmet, you know, they were a pair, all right. I got to see them perform a few times, and of course, they used to hang out on the telethon and stuff. So for all you old timers, you know, but also, you know, who else passed away this week? Eric Carmen, who was the lead singer of the Raspberries, and he had the hit "All by Myself" and "Hungry Eyes." He was 74, so RIP
there. Big Cleveland guy.
Yeah. Now, there you are.
Nope.
So, Greg, you use the microphone on your iPad, right, and the speakers?
Right, yep.
Okay.
That's all I use when it comes up for the microphone. It says, do you want to use Wi-Fi for your audio? And I say, sure, and okay. That's it.
Bernie, you back?
Bernie, you. I think you may need to exit the Zoom call and then come back in order to get the new audio settings.
All right. Well, anyway, he'll be back. In the meantime, so we were talking about NASA offline, but the reason why that picture in our logo is because NASA's mission, which is slated for October, will send the spacecraft to Jupiter's moon Europa. And they have figured out that it is possible that there is a life there, because they believe that there's water there and an ocean. And so I don't know if people could live in that horrible, environment. But
I'm telling you, I went swimming there once. It was terrible. It was cold.
Yeah, and the portions were small. Unbelievable.
The hotel was a disaster.
Yeah,
hotel,
Europa. What?
Yeah, the Europa Hotel, obviously, you know, on Europa.
I'm giving them a bad rating on Airbnb, that's for sure. You know, they'll never, you know, yeah, I want my money back, I tell you, you know. I'm in an Airbnb right now, which is really quite nice here in a city called Hua Hin, spelled Huahin. You could Google map it. It's really nice up the coast.
Okay, we got Bernie back. Now you just have to unmute yourself, and I think you're good. Oh. Nope.
Well, we got to keep moving. I can't figure out what's going on with Bernie from here, but I'm sure he's a smart guy. He's going to figure it out.
He will.
So, did anybody watch the Oscars?
A little tiny bit, Jen. A little tiny bit.
Yeah, I did. It was. I liked it actually. And
how come your video's not on, Greg?
There it is. I was laying down on the couch. So
you handsome son of a bitch. You know, we want to look at you. You know, that's it.
No, I like the Oscars actually. I thought it was really well done.
If you think you're one in a million, Greg, there were 19 more of you watching at the same time. 19.5 million viewers. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I liked that that Ryan Gosling music number.
I am Ken.
So I thought it was good. Yeah. I'm not really sure what's going on with Billie Eilish. I don't get the love of Billie Eilish. Maybe somebody else can tell me.
You've got a great voice.
Sounds like that kind of ballad stuff is not for me.
Yeah, but she also sang a last year she got one for the James Bond movie. Or maybe 2 years ago she got it.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing. I mean she's come a long way in a really short period of time. Her and her brother, they're pretty amazing. I mean, you know, she's done well. She's done well.
I tell you what, with that song that she sang at the Oscars, that would be hell to do live. You know, if you're doing it like an arena tour with it, like just breathless, you know.
Well, that's how all her songs are.
Yeah.
So the orchestra sorry, Greg, carry on.
No, I just said, the signal to noise ratio had to have been cranked up. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it must be hard to mix her.
So I was listening to the start, Jan. So I'm going to watch the whole thing, but I watched about half an hour at the end because I saw a bit of the start, but I was too tired. I was going to watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The band is live, isn't it? The orchestra is live in another room. Is that correct?
I was actually in a balcony above the stage.
Yeah, radio. I was impressed, and I know we're listening to the telly, and it goes through many, many electrons to get to where I am, but I was impressed with the detail and the smoothness of the band playing. I didn't hear any of the performances. I'm just talking about the one, whether it was a backing track or whatever, I don't know, but I thought it was a live band because it was an orchestra.
I may be incorrect, but I think Mix Mobile did that. Jan, do you know who did the mobile for the
Not know, but I would be very surprised if Mike Abbott wasn't involved in it. Mm-hmm. And A2K, they've been involved in it. I mean, look, this is the number one show of its kind, granddaddy of them all, and they've got the best people working on it for sure. You know,
the quality.
Yeah, David would know. I think, you know, if David pops in, he'd probably know. But I think
David should probably pop in. I think David's available. Kenny's probably on his way right now to Las Vegas to Manilo this week. Kurt just texted me. He's going to be coming in again in a few minutes. He's checking into the hotel, so he'll be live with us shortly. And then, of course,
when is David going on his cruise? Do you remember? Is it next week?
No, not next. I think it's not till the middle of the month.
Oh, okay. Because a huge rock and roll cruise just finished up. I know a couple people that were on that one.
I would think, you know, it's a moneymaker, you know, those kind of things, because that's the perfect people who are, you know, looking forward to get away, and then they like the music, you know, of our generation. So they've got the money to do it, and then, you know, cruising is big, and some of these new ships are really floating, you know, megatropolises. They're not even cities anymore. They can handle 8,000 people or something crazy like that. You know, go figure. It's nuts. So speaking of nuts, this is an amazing statistic. This was on NBC News and from a Gallup poll. And basically they're saying now women ages 18 to 26, which would be Gen Z, nearly 30 of them, 30% identify themselves as LGBTQ. That's a, I mean, that is insane that 30% of Gen Z women are not that there's anything wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that it's really changed since I was a kid, you know, or maybe not. Maybe they just didn't have Gallup in those days.
Can you guys finally hear me, by the way?
Yay!
Yes, we hear you. Yes.
So to answer all your questions, I was in the trailer. I was on a MacBook, and for whatever reason, I could not change the microphone. No matter what I selected or what I did, I was not getting any microphone input into the computer at all. So I had to do a last minute grab some stuff, come into the shop, and get it going in here. And I get all the way in here, and I get it all set up here, and it says, you have to go back to the other device to allow that to be changed over to this device. I run back out to the trailer again. You know how it goes. But I've used this computer many times to do this, so I'm sure we'll be fine from here.
Well, there you go. And welcome. Ken Porter just came into the room. I just got text from Kurt Hare. He's on his way. So, Bernie, excellent. You were just about to introduce yourself. So go ahead. Come back.
I don't like Bernie. Him. I'm maybe obscure to some people, but a lot of people, including Ken, we've been around each other for a minute. So I've spent my entire life in this industry, you know, and Ken knows me best from back in the L-Acoustics days and then onward through EAW. So I worked a lot of years with manufacturers, and I was watching the clock kind of ticking away on my career. And about 4 years ago, I decided I just wanted to break away and do something on my own, you know, make that my swan song instead of, you know, getting the watch and the swift kick in the pants going out the door kind of thing. So, a long career in audio, owned a sound company myself for a number of years, originally from Canada, you know, front of house sound engineer for years, manufacturer's, you know, employee for many years with L-Acoustics and EAW. And now here I am doing my own thing.
So tell us what it is, you know, what is it you're doing? And I think that your company is called TCM. Is that what you call the company?
No, the company's called Truth and Audio.
Truth and Audio.
Yeah.
Well, what is TCM then?
Product that you guys kicked in a conversation there a week or so ago is called TCM. And that's one of the products that I've got out right now. And so basically, one of the reasons why I wanted to do Truth and Audio, as I just explained, is I just wanted to have a maybe very varied swan song. And I wanted to create some stuff that was kind of maybe I saw needing or lacking or whatever in the industry. And when you work for a big brand or something like that, your ideas are shared, valued, but not necessarily relevant to the company and the company's business. So sometimes you just got to put your money where your mouth is and go out and try things on your own and hopefully introduce something or maybe many things into the market that are all of a sudden needed. And so that's basically what I've done with Truth and Audio, is tried to create a company that makes unique stuff, you know, like not looking for the big mass market windfall or anything like that. Just want to have some fun.
So tell me, what is it now? You're working on a project that has network switches. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was going to say this when we were noodling around before you started the broadcast. So I'm the UI guy in this TCM product category. So I'm the user interface guy. I don't do the electronics. That's handled by others. And so my whole concept and idea was, after, you know, many years of touring, being introduced into network PAs originally back in 2012, you know, when we were coming up with the EAW Anya system, I got thrown in the deep end of networking sound systems and working on that stuff. And that was all well and good. As time went on and I started having more and more opportunities to be on the show site, out with crews and everything, I started to just kind of formulate this opinion that maybe we haven't addressed networking from a hardware aspect. We've done lots of digital electronic, you know, advancement with networks. They do crazy, crazy things and really, really help us. But I wasn't seeing anybody really take up the charge to say, how do we actually use this stuff in the field? How do we carry it? How do we hook it up? Because a lot of guys that I would work with on the road were all being introduced to this at the same time. You know, most of us here are probably still like an NLA kind of guy. You know, I just want to plug in my speaker cabinet and have it turn on. And that's very, very real. And the roadblock that I was seeing was nobody had really kind of distilled this down from a stagehand or an audio crew or whatever from their perspective to work on how I can interface myself with this stuff. How easy can I put this stuff together? How repeatable is it? How many accessories and options do I have with doing networking? Because if you strip all that out, what you're left with is either something sitting on top of a road case or something that you had to build at the shop in a rack. And you had to vet out the cables and do all that sort of stuff, which is all well and good if it's a fixed rack. But what I did with TCM was I put all that in a box, you know, put everything in a case, a little case. And it basically is like a grab and go utility that you can use for, you know, whatever networking applications you may have. And then came up with a bunch of accessories. You know, ways to attach it to sound systems, rack sleeves that you could put the stuff in, C clamps that you can attach to it and hang it from a truss if you need to do distributed networking around a truss. And all of this, in one way or another, could be handled in a proprietary fashion inside of a production company with some chops. You know, they can do these things, but nothing is in the market that could just do it all. You know, you could just buy it, get the accessories, and just go out and do it, whatever you needed to do. I originally started it with an unmanaged switch because I really wanted to make it super simple for guys doing like Dante and stuff like that. And then ultimately, through some persuasion, market persuasion, developed a AVB Milan version, which I guess that's what Kurt and you guys were talking about when I saw the video, was about the Meyer Panther rig and things like that. And so so I used the Netgear 4250 switches and built a full-on AVB Milan version of it. So I have two versions now, an unmanaged and a fully managed version.
Okay.
So yeah. So that's kind of where we can start.
Well, that's pretty impressive. So now in regards to this box, is it configurable or you just sell it as a piece that you just have to use it the way you want, or do you make it configurable for the client? Is it off the shelf? How does it work?
Yeah, it's completely off the shelf. So there's if you're running AVB, well, if you're running the unmanaged switches, then there is no configuration because unmanaged switches don't have any configuration. It's doesn't have any green Ethernet, doesn't have anything that's in the switches that is going to get in the way of you going on with your show. So that's let's call it a dumb switch, right? It's a gigabit. And what I do is I build the infrastructure and everything inside the case. The cases are aluminum and bring all the connections to the front using like Neutrik connectors, Ethercons and Powercons and all the industry standard stuff, all the stuff that we're used to dealing with instead of, you know, broken RJ45s and, you know, plastic hanging out. It's a robust kind of approach. With the Netgear version, with the AVB Milan version, yeah, it has to be configurable because it's a switch that they built that has multiple profiles. One day it can be used on an AVB system. The next day it can be used on a Dante system. You just have to upload a new profile into the switch. So all of that is still maintained and there's nothing removed or chopped off because of what I've done to it. And I've actually got direct connection with the guys at Netgear. They've been super helpful in this project because they see the value in what I'm doing, which is, you know, look at it this way. There was a time, and I don't know when that time was, maybe someone's older than me that remembers, when you basically ran out six extension cords instead of one power bar. You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to give everybody like a grab and go utility that just gives them access to networking really simple. And with a lot of guys these days, you know, you got your, okay, you got your A-listers, right? You've got your IT, you know, propeller heads, but on a factor of 10, you've got the guys below them, the B-level guys who don't have the chops that those in-house IT people have, right? And they're the ones that are out on the gig. The IT guy's still sitting back at the shop, you know? And so they're out there and they're wondering why nothing doesn't work. They can't get anything to work, right? And of course, we know guys who do shows know there's a myriad of reasons why something doesn't work within a network. What I did is I took away as many potential pitfalls as possible so that there's a much clearer path to getting your network up and running. We just sold a bunch to Freeman AV. And they, you know, they're at South by Southwest. I mean, they're using them all over the place over there for that event. And the one single reason that they were wanting to use this was because it took a lot of questions away from their on-site staff. They're, you know what I mean? Like, it's like plug it in. It either works or it doesn't work. Not like you got a bad cable in the rack or somebody didn't patch it right or somebody's password protected something. This is the unmanaged versions they bought. So it's a really simple plug-and-play solution for them.
Now, are these powered boxes, or do they take the power from the inputs and the outputs?
So
how are you powering it?
They come with power cons with power cons in and through. So the idea when you're using them with a sound system is that you could harvest the power off of a cabinet, because most of the powered speaker cabinets are using power con or top connectors. And then you feed that into the TCM first, which is up on the grid with the sound system, and then just daisy chain out of that with another power cable and just go right into the cabinet, because the switches don't draw any power. And then most of the time they're getting 15 amps or 20 amps on each cabinet circuit wise. So that just means you don't have to run any extra AC cables up to the array. If we're talking about, you know, using it upstairs kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So if we're discussing the difference between the managed application and the unmanaged switch, so in the managed switch space, you were basically saying, well, if somebody's running Dante, they could have a profile, and if they're running Milan, they could have another profile. And
in the managed version.
Yes, in the managed version.
Yeah, yeah.
So what settings are getting fiddled with in the managed version between profiles? What kinds of things are you, where are the changes being made?
Okay, so this is that's a great question. The answer is different, but it's a great question. The answer is I don't do anything personally. So Netgear is the one that came into it. So they have this new series, the 4250, what they call the Pro AV series. And
yeah,
what they
I'm,
did
I'm looking
was,
at that. Yeah.
Yeah, what they did was they took a very focused approach to going after the audiovisual market. And they have this guy, this French guy. I can't remember what his name is off the top of my head now, but he's kind of like the gearhead of the whole operation. And, you know, kind of like Luminex, right? Like they went after all of these protocols. And so in a lot of respects, in terms of how the switches work, they have a lot of similarities between their kind of approaches. So what you would do, as an example, if you were doing a Dante gig today, you would patch yourself into the switch, get into its GUI, and you would simply go down and select Dante as a profile. And then Netgear has already vetted out all of those basic settings with the Dante protocol. And it will just automatically load that profile into the switch. And then you're good to go. You can go in and do additional management inside the switch because you have a full interface where you can go in. And if your chops are together and you know how to set up your own VLANs and so on and so forth, you can go in and do any of that. But
that was my next question. I mean, do you have any idea what they're fiddling with in that profile? Are they running VLANs? Or is there spanning tree? I mean, do they have redundancy?
I really think it comes down to things like, you know, even things as simple as snooping and green Ethernet and things like that. And, you know, Dante keeps kind of expanding what their capabilities are too, right? So they, you know, when I was first introduced in the Dante, it was a very simple, very straightforward kind of thing, but they keep getting more complicated because they want to keep up with the Joneses in terms of what their switches are capable of doing. So all I could tell you, because I haven't dissected each and every profile, is that the only thing that the profile does is put you in the safe space to be able to accurately and dependably use Dante based on Audinate's own protocols. And that would be the same with AVB Milan. You know, you talk to Yamaha, you talk to various manufacturers, and they say, well, you know, to make sure you're safe, you want to set this to this and this to this and this to this. And that's what basically those profiles are doing. They're just putting in whatever the organization's suggested settings are as to how they would work within their own switches.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really meant to be that kind of a scenario. Just load the profile and
yeah, no, it kind of sounds like they're trying to just demystify.
Exactly. Switching. You get my point.
So it's demystifying. Just load this profile and plug shit in and it's gonna work.
And that's only half a promise if you don't have a company that's not willing to stay up to date, because things change, right? So as time goes on, what you thought was a good profile for AVB Milan a year ago may not be current anymore. And so they put together this small team within Netgear. I don't know if it's more than 20 or 30 people. And that's a business class switch company. So you can imagine how many employees they actually have. But these guys are like hyper-focused just on this one particular, you know, range of products, which is dealing directly with the AV industry. They're showing up at our trade shows, you know, Infocom and, you know, all of the others. And they're actually interfacing with people there on the show site. And then to your answer that you said, the next layer then comes to me. And that's what I did. So you said it makes a simple plug and play from their aspect by loading up a specific profile. And I say, yeah, I took that one step further by further simplifying it by giving you all industry standard connections in a robust utility type enclosure that you can use on many different things in your show. You don't have to build racks anymore. You don't have to do that kind of stuff. You just take it off the shelf. It's going to work.
Gotcha. Okay. Kurt, what happened?
Kurt. Whose background is he using out tonight? I want to know.
Yeah, I was just going to say he's got
his client fucked up and didn't get us our rooms where we're supposed to be. I'm at a goddamn Best Western.
Nice. Goddamn Best Western. And
used to mean something.
Parked the goddamn 26-foot truck in a parking lot full of punters. Like, Jesus Christ.
Best Western used to mean something.
Yeah. Used to doors.
It was the 70s, but it used to mean something.
The door, as long as the doors face in, I can live with it. Doors out,
we'll
out.
Keep the lights on for you, Kurt. We'll keep the lights on.
Yeah, we'll keep the light on for you.
Doors in, I'm in. Doors out, I'm out.
Well, we'll know you're entertained once I see someone else's background come up on your screen. That's all I'm waiting for.
I'm celebrating the glorious Best Western background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful background, too. I love it. You know?
Yeah. So I probably missed most of what I wanted to know, but whatever.
No, you haven't missed anything yet that you want to know. Now's the time to ask your question.
So well, he's already talked to me several times. Kurt and I have worked together several times on discussing this. But I this is literally the very first time that I've actually gone on online or anything with any shape or form to talk about this. You know, I go to trade shows and I have a lot of banter there. I do my little, obviously my social media stuff, but I really never put myself in a position for a Q&A. And I just really think that it's really important to have more dialogue in this stuff, because what I did and what I continue to do is not something that's proprietary. It's not something that was, thrown together really hastily. It was the result of a huge amount of time on the road, you know, dealing with the brothers and sisters and the frustrations of networking, and just kind of standing back and going, man, we're just missing something. Like something is just missing from this whole equation. We've done amazing things with power connections and racks and distribution panels. And we've done amazing things with analog, with Amphenol connectors and all military spec stuff. And then you go to network and it's like, yeah, not so much. and that's really what the genesis of it was give the industry something that they really need. The problem is, Jan and guys, is that the industry doesn't even realize that they need it yet, right? They don't realize it because you don't know what you don't know. If you've never had the stuff and used it, then you really don't know how it changes your day, how it makes things easier and stuff, because nobody else makes anything like it. I'm the first person to do something like this with networks. So until there's enough of them out in the field and stagehands and people are getting their hands on them and kind of getting that realization of, oh, this couldn't be easier. That's mm-hmm. It's going to take that time to start to get the traction. You have to be, you have to, you'll know once you start using this stuff, because I've been using it for a couple of years.
Right. Well, I'd like to have Ken Porter's opinion on something, and maybe he's got a question for you or anything he could add into this.
How do you deal with heat in the box, in the sealed aluminum box?
So I don't actually, on the very surface of it, the first 25% of the answer to the question, I currently don't. The internal switches, the ABB Milan ones, which are the only ones that get hot, the unmanaged switches just don't anyway, because they're doing jack squat in terms of processing. The ABB Milan ones get warm, but currently the max temperature, which we would call the shutdown temperature of the neck gear switches, is 77°C. So we're talking north of 160, closer to 170 degrees Fahrenheit inside the case before the switches are going to start to believe they're going thermal. So what I did was, and you know, like I said, the ABB Milan thing came after. The unmanaged switches were first. And in the interim, while I was kind of investigating this and trying to think forward about things like heat and stuff like that, and I threw this up, I threw a photo of it up and on the page, I came up with this thing that I just loosely call Gatorback, which is a bent aluminum diamond plate, which is like highly polished. And so it uses like the same accessory track that you can put over the top of the TCMs if they're sitting up on top of your rig. And one of the best ways to stop things from heating is reflecting. So if we can reflect a lot of the sunlight off the top of the case, then that's a lot of heat that's not going in there. Plus, the cases are aluminum, which dissipates heat and doesn't contain heat like steel cases do.
Do you have any heat sinks on the aluminum case?
No, the case itself is a heat sink. You know, so it basically will just radiate heat off. And I'm only speculating on this because we've never seen it hot enough to even warrant a question. And I've had it out on many shows. The unmanaged one sat for two complete summers sitting out on top of the EAW stuff for sound image in Napa. And we never had one issue with any temperatures. So I think the best way to say that is I'm always trying to forward think, right? I'm trying to think of where the plot holes could be. And I'm constantly thinking of new ideas and things that I can do to further improve on the product if necessary. That's why I never even put that Gatorback thing on up in pictures or anything before, because I really don't think it's necessary. But if you're in an extreme situation, let's say you're in Phoenix or you're in Abu Dhabi or you're in some massively hot area, at least I have the designs in place to be able to do additional cooling of the boxes should it become necessary.
Now, is there a standard configuration of these boxes, or in other words, how many ins or how many outs, or is that how you sell the product based on how many ins and outs you need?
Well, everything starts off with the case size. So that was the one thing that I had to lock in place was, basically the width and height of the case, because if you don't maintain the form factor, then your accessories can't move around, right? So the case had to be of a particular size, and that is basically for, I have two versions of TCM. One's a double, which is a dual redundant configuration where you have a left and a right side, two switches. And then I've recently introduced a single switch version for guys who are doing like permanent installations and things like that, or maybe don't need the full Monty kind of thing. Right. And so basically in terms of patching configurations, it is whatever the switch manufacturer provided. So in the case of the unmanaged versions, you have 8 usable ports times two for the dual redundant model. And for the Netgear AVB versions, there is, I believe it's 9 or 10 usable ports for each switch, plus an what they call an OOB port, which is an out-of-band port for programming and stuff like that. So I don't try to reinvent the wheel. I'm not actually inputting any changes into the way of the functionality of the switches in any way, shape, or form. What I did was basically encase it in a package that was more user-friendly than a, you know, something in a cardboard box and a bunch of cables that you then have to put together in a rack and do all that kind of stuff.
So basically you haven't written any, there's no proprietary software, but so is there a secret sauce
to what I'm doing?
Yes.
The secret, if there's a secret
sauce. Don't give it away.
No.
Mystery.
So let's be clear, right? So I took someone else's electronics and I put it in a case. Doesn't sound too complicated, right? It's like anybody can do that. But the point is, nobody did. And so how do I protect the IP, I guess, is how you would throw it out there. I don't really intend to protect the IP in a legal fashion or anything like that of what I've done. You really can't. It's like trying to protect the layout of speakers in a speaker cabinet. You know, you can't. Somebody else is going to do it eventually. And hopefully more people do it, because it would just validate, you know, the original kind of approach I took. But I will go on to say that there is nothing that's standardized inside of the case. So you might think, well, I can just buy a bunch of Neutra connectors and I can just do this and do that, and I can have the same thing. Well, you can have the same functionality, but it'll never be able to fit in the size, the condensed package that I've built. And it probably won't be as strong, because that's where I put my emphasis on size and strength and weight, trying to keep it lightweight. That's where it'll kind of hold its own. And the fact that I keep adding to the ecosystem, I keep adding accessories and I keep adding parts. You might get a brand or a company out there that may say, hey, well, let's all hope and pray that, you know, he's making a lot of money selling those things. He's selling a lot of those things. We should just jump in and we should make one too, because that's what our company does. And they'll probably make one, like they'll probably make the thing that I'm selling, but they probably will not go across and spend the time and energy it takes to build out all the accessories and all the things that go along with it. And I think that that's where it'll hold its own.
Right. I think you're talking about the Amazon model, where once you start selling it, Amazon says, well, I can do that better than you.
I'm talking about the business model. That's what everybody does. You know, everybody plays a wait and see game. And especially when somebody comes up with something that's different, you know, if I was going to build a line array tomorrow, whatever. Right. But, you know, you come out with an incredibly unique thing and somebody takes notice, but that doesn't mean they're going to do anything. You know, this is 2024. It's the years of shareholders. And they're going to sit back and they're going to watch and they're going to see if there's money in it. And if they see a lot of sales and stuff, then they'll pull the trigger and jump on that gravy train. But they'll let guys like me take the bashes on the head all the way, have all these conversations, do all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when it gets some traction, that's when they'll just jump in and make a version. That's my feeling.
I hear you. Now, do you make one that is like, let's just say, rack mountable for like installs?
Yeah. I just showed it at the NAMM show. Kurt saw it, actually. We were sitting at the table. He saw it there. So the original one is a dual. So it's kind of big, right? But it was still half space. So that was one of the key things in the beginning, was I wanted it to be half space because I wanted to be able to put other modules beside the other. And then as the original was out and I was talking to people, of course, now I've got a reason to talk about this stuff. You know, people started coming back to me and saying, you know, it'd be really cool, man, if you could rack mount that. And I would say kind of tongue in cheek, you know, yeah, you can rack mount them, but it's like four spaces high, you know? And then I had further dialogues after the AVB version release where people were saying, well, you know, for installations and things, you know, I don't want to pay for 20 ports when each of the arrays is only like 6 cabinets. Right. So, and that made a lot of sense to me. And so I went back and I did a design for a single switch AVB version, which is the obviously the same Netgear switch. And I all but sat on the thing to make sure that it stayed within two spaces high and it's half rack. So that is that functional prototype I brought to NAMM and showed it around to a bunch of people. I think the response was good. It kind of like rounds out the package, you know, it allows you to scale easily for your project. And so that's still coming. That design's finished, but of course, you know, moving into production and stuff. And I'll respond to the market in terms of, you know, how fast we kind of light that thing up. One of the unique things about my company is that I make everything myself here in Las Vegas. So I don't have any. Well, I don't make the switches. I don't make the connectors, but I build the cases and I do all the assembly. I do the powder coating. I do the whole construction. So I created Truth and Audio to be like a tiered scenario. You know, start off small. If you know how to build them yourself, if you can buy the machines to do it yourself, do it that way. If something gets traction, then I'm prepared to move on to third party vendors, where then I can move it out and have, instead of dozens, I can have hundreds or thousands. But if something doesn't work out and it's just not getting traction and I want to kind of fold it up and put that away, then I haven't been devastated by, you know, minimum order quantities that most manufacturers want to see if you're going to, you know, get them to fire up their presses and machines to do such things.
So now my last question, well, I might be lying here. I might have more.
Ask me anything you want.
But right now, is there a minimum and a maximum of a type of system that you're looking for, or what is your sweet spot of what type of environment you want to be in? Is it, you know, like for example, in the Panther system, how many boxes? Could it be a larger system or a smaller system? Where is your sweet spot? Who's
the customer?
Your target market right now. Who is your
so
target,
that was
other than Kurt and Porter?
That was
and they're both here in the room.
And they're both here in the room. And we ain't letting them out. And so in the beginning, that was kind of easy because I only had the one version with the unmanaged switches. So that was, it was like a one-shot deal. And that whole concept of TCM is kind of blown out exponentially in terms of how many different parts and interfaces and things like that. And so we're only scratching the surface here because ABB, as an example, carries right on into lighting. So we don't even have to stop at just audio. I was at CES last year and I was talking to broadcast people and they're saying, holy shit, we don't have anything like this in the market, you know, like this lunch pail kind of scenario for when they're out doing like remote shoots and things like that, that they could just tell a guy to go drop this 500 feet away and so on and so forth. So there is no target per se. It can scale itself all the way down to, you know, the single switch version, which is, you know, 10 ports, and you could keep adding them together. They even hang from each other, so you can even hang one under another and scale it that way. But obviously audio is my you know, my jam. It's what I know the most about, and it's where I feel like an interface in the best way to customers. And when it comes to like the Panther rig and stuff, you know, for the guys who are not using networking, they're daisy chain, right? So they're using analog and they're going into one cabinet and then loop it to the next cabinet, loop it to the next cabinet, loop it to the next cabinet. With TCM, when the networking part of it, you would be doing a star topology from the network. So basically you'd be coming out on a multi and then, you know, each box gets its own direct port connection to back to the switches. And then you wouldn't have that cascading failure. If a cable goes bad, like in a daisy chain, as you know, if the cable goes bad, everything below that cable's gone. That's it. And you can't fix it when it's 40, 50 feet up in the air. With a star topology, even though it's a network star topology, you would lose that one enclosure. That one cable goes bad, one enclosure goes down, and the rest of them continue to work. So there's a bit of safety there. Although I wish that the ABB Milan stuff all had redundancy like the Dante stuff. It doesn't, at least the Meyer stuff doesn't, but it's a very robust network is what I've learned. So
Bernard, regrettably, I have to go. I direct messaged you my name and telephone and email. Oh, I'd love to get together. So if you could be kind enough to give me a ring at your leisure.
We'll talk more about motorcycles.
And Kurt, how did
I was hoping you would give him one zinging question that would leave him, you know, his ears burning, you know, but
I mean, it's essentially what it's so, yeah. I mean, I understand the paradigm. I get it because, you know, switches can get very complex depending on what you're trying to do.
And I just want to leave you one thought. What I would leave anybody with this thought. If there was anybody in the world who never wanted to do anything like this, it's me. You know, I didn't want to have one when we first started working on Anya at EAW and it was all network. I'm like, dude, I can barely get my computer to log on to the internet, you know? And so I'm a speaker guy. I've always been a speaker guy, but I found such a huge need in this market for something like this, that it was just compelling me to, you know, you got to get this out there. You got to get this out there. And like I said, I'm sure the more people that get their hands on it and start using it, and sure, you're going to have some people with a little fear factor about temperatures and things like that. Well, the same rules apply to the speaker cabinets that are being hung there too. They're self-powered. They're encased in wood, which is obviously a really good insulator, right? They get just as hot as anything else. So we're always in that world of what ifs and stuff. And what does the Meyer Panther shut down at? Anybody know? Like, how many degrees will a Panther amplifier go to before it goes into thermal? It's all the same deal. At least I have other products and ideas that if that becomes an issue, and I don't expect anybody to be a guinea pig, because that's why I'm saying it's 170 degrees F. But if
I gotta go, gentlemen.
Sorry, take care.
All right.
Cheers.
If it becomes an issue, I have things and ways to address the, let's say, the radical temperature problems that may occur. Definitely don't have to worry about the average temperatures. It's not gonna be a problem.
I've got some questions. So
who dat? Oh, Kurt.
I guess I'll start with, so what are people, obviously people have been using network audio and large scale PA prior to this product. What have they been doing and what's wrong with it?
What they've been doing is what I've actually been able to be very, very close to. And, you know, that was kind of the genesis of the whole thing, is what everybody else is doing. And when we, so here's the natural kind of go-to for, since we're talking sound systems in general, the go-to is keep everything on the ground, put it in racks, and run network cables up to the PA, right? Seems totally straightforward. And for the most part, it is. But you're already replacing that single NL8 cable that you used to be able to use. Now you have to send up power, and you have to send up network, and you have to send up all that kind of stuff. And that extra, you know, baggage, let's say, all that cable that you have to pack and vet and keep control of is basically an exponential curve once you get into larger arrays. My commitment, let's call it, to keeping the network switches local to the sound system is meant to clean up the stage. It's meant to clean up the patch. It's meant to have repeatability and consistency, because wherever the array is, the network is, you know, because obviously you don't always get to put your racks where you want them on shows, right? And eliminates what could be road cases full of cable that are really not necessary. You know, when we were touring with Petty, with the Anya rig, we had giant road cases full of multi-pin network cables that all had to go up every day. Up, down, up, down, up, down. And we were hanging the racks behind the PA. On the second tour, we hung them behind the PA. It never seemed right. It always felt kludgy. It never felt clean and tidy. And then when I brought out the first kind of prototype TCMs and started trying them out with sound image guys and stuff, because they had Anya in their inventory, I was just blown away by how simple it went together and how few cables it required. There was just no other option that I could think of that was going to be slicker, more dependable, and easier and more intuitive to set up and tear down than just putting the switches local to the arrays. There was just nothing. I tried everything. But for those diehards, you know, that say, you know, I really just prefer to have my shit in racks on the ground, they probably wouldn't be using a self-powered PA anyway. But but let's just say it's just my network, then fine. You can mount it on the ground. You can put it in a rack. That's why I built them in half space sizes like that. So you could still default to a rack if you really, really, really wanted to. I don't see the need for it. I think it's more complicated. It's more capable, more cable that's introduced. But hey, if that's your jam, I'm not trying to change, you know, someone's opinion on where they should put their stuff.
Well, I haven't used amp racks in 20 something years, so It's not where I'm headed at all. I don't want to do that.
In but racks,
I don't have any racks. I have cases. I don't really need racks for anything that has to do with the PA except for a distro.
Right.
So my concern, I mean, I think you've kind of addressed the heat concern that unfortunately I probably expressed. But
I don't think it's unfortunate at all. I think it's actually good. I mean, these things have to be. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm talking to most people. I don't know anybody here. And that's why I'm taking this opportunity to go open forum so I can get all kinds of random questions, but also have the opportunity to address them immediately. So people don't get the wrong idea, you know, like something is or is what it is. I'd rather I screw up my own story. You know, my own foot, my own mouth, you know,
170 Fahrenheit. I mean, I think it would like particularly in my Bend, Oregon thing where the ambient can be 99 to 100 degrees.
Right.
And, you know, I think we could get to the 120, 130, 140 inside that box after all day. But with 170, I can feel more comfortable about that. I mean, one of my issues is I'm much more interested in the data than I am in driving the PA with digital signal. I'm much more interested in monitoring what the fan speeds and the temperatures and voice coil and all that. That's what I really care about.
Well, I mean, that's what you care about, but by default, you get the digital audio too. So you get it all.
In my particular infrastructure that I don't want to criticize because it was created prior to really widespread Milan system driving, is that... the signals are present in both locations. If you are running it with the Milan and you have channel one as your upper two boxes on the left side of the PA. So that same routing, patching and signal is going to be available on XLR analog output one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't mute it.
Right.
So the idea of having an analog backup that's the same as what you're doing as far as boxes and beam steering, low mid beam steering, and those kinds of things that are, you know, part of what your plan would be, whether you're committed to analog or committed to the Milan. In either scenario, you can drive it that way. But to have an analog backup that you can switch to immediately, because you can't mute it. So the amplifier is going to see both analog and the digital in at the same time. Obviously, the digital is going to be late. So there's going to be a big comb filter parked in your PA. With the infrastructure that I'm using, there's no way to mute the analog until you need it. So you can't simply run both versions up there. You can have one XLR that drives the whole PA, which is your second parachute to keep you from dying when you splatter on the pavement. But it's not going to be what the guy just mixed the first half of the show on before the network failed.
So, yeah, and you know what? I don't claim to be a Meyer expert in the way that they've kind of configured the digital versus analog world to work. What I was told was that, yeah, you're correct. The analog and digital is running simultaneously, and the analog would be patched out of like a matrix output on the console as your backup. And you would have that obviously turned down while you were using the digital audio, and then should you lose network for any reason, then you would throw the analog in to compensate for it. I can't believe that they wouldn't have some sort of a latency compensation, though. I mean, you're saying that there's a time difference between the digital and the analog. I would have expected them to build in a latency onto the digital side so that it continued to match analog, or vice versa.
You'd have to delay the analog.
I delayed the analog. Yeah, I can't imagine
have,
that they.
I might have had that kind of disruption along the way, but
I don't know.
No one has brought that to my attention. And the thing is, you'd have to have a way to mute 16 channels simultaneously of analog, so that you need a device to go through that simply lives there to mute it, or you need a completely secondary drive system that's simply a backup. And to get that secondary drive system just to be there as a backup that's, you know, looped in, so it's fed the same inputs, but you mute the inputs and only open those up and kill the inputs to the first device if the network fails. So that's that device alone that just sits there in case something ever happens is like twice what your product costs in the first place. So the backup for something to maybe go wrong someday is twice as expensive as you know what you're offering. And don't get me wrong, I thought it was a great thing. I can personally speak for the build quality, having there sitting there looking at it. It's very well built. So I have no issues with any of that stuff. I'm just trying to get my brain around what happens if it goes bad. How do I recover? And I realize that it's a little bit hypocritical probably because I'm a self-powered PA guy and I've already got my amps flying 40 feet in the air. So the idea that putting another thing 40 feet in the air.
Yeah, some practical kind of considerations. Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily make sense.
Here's the other thing too, is that I've been an audio, like a PA network guy since, like I said, 2013, right? So every single, I'm only speaking for the adaptive stuff because I never ran Meyer, I never ran the others. But arguably, Audinate and Dante were probably not at the same developmental level as ABB Milan, right? So they're all doing a pretty good job now. I don't know who is in what aspect of the race, but I do know that at least according to Meyer and other people that I've talked to that use ABB Milan, their interpretation is it's a far more robust network system than Dante was, which is why these brands don't seem to worry about only sending one network signal and not running an honest to God, you know, digital backup like Audinate. And the analog is there as a holy shit, what if, which even the adaptive stuff from EAW has, there's even an analog circuit in there. So I left EAW at the beginning of 2018. So for 5 straight years, you know, out touring with Tom Petty and Blink 182 and, Maroon 5 and all these guys packing, you know, 48 plus 56 cabinets, every single one of them running off network. Not one single cabinet in any of those tours or shows ever saw an analog signal. I never saw the thing come off primary. Never once did I see the Dante stuff come off primary. Well, meaning that we had no failures.
The Petty rig failed in Seattle.
Ah, but that was a whole, there was a story for that. That wasn't the network per se. That wasn't the network. I was there. I was standing right there. I was actually part of that problem. In the fact that, so here's what happened. In case you guys heard what happened, but never knew the story. So obviously big, big Anya rig. We had a bunch of Annas that were brought in to do the delay ring for the stadium. And everything was going swimmingly. I mean, we were having a killer show. And at one point, Vic Wagner, who was the lead systems engineer, and we have Matt McQuaid up on the stage, he said that he was walking around in the delay rings, and he heard some crackling going on in one of the columns, right? So, you know, we're speculating. The Annas came from another rental company. They had their own setup and everything, but everything seemed to be fine as far as their equipment was concerned. And so we were left with, okay, well, we got a little crackling going on back there. What do you think we should be doing? So we're having a little powwow and stuff. And Vic said, well, what if I send all the settings to the PA again? Because you remember with that adaptive stuff, you have to send all the settings to the PA or it just shoots straight out. It doesn't know what the hell it's doing. So not a big deal. I've done it dozens and dozens of times, you know, in the middle of a show, send the settings to the system. It doesn't burp or fart or do anything. It just keeps going. So no big deal. And so we're speculating, you know, I wasn't fully convinced I wanted to do it because it's Tom fucking Petty, and which is different than, you know, maybe a festival or whatever, you know, small daytime thing. This is a pretty big deal, you know, 35,000 people. But I said, look, man, I'm going to leave it up to you. If you think you want to do it, just let's see what happens. Wasn't freaking out or nothing. I'm like, I just want to make sure that I've done my due diligence and said, I got to leave the buck with you because I probably wouldn't, but it's okay. He's like, yeah, I'm fine with it. So he goes up to the computer, he recalculates the whole model, and hits the fucking go button. Immediately the PA turns off, right? So we know what caused it, whatever he just did, right? So it wasn't a network failure. The whatever he just did and whatever he just told the PA to do just turned it off. And so obviously, you know, jaws hit the floor, everyone's aghast. We don't have a frigging clue as to what just happened. Not a clue, but we know we just did it because it was simultaneous to the push of that button. So Vic's freaking out. He gets on the radio. He's going to Matt. He's going, Matt, you know, check this, blah, 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 check this, check that. And it didn't take very long before he realized, as he's looking at because the software for the EAW stuff will list all your Dante devices. Like it'll show you all the speaker cabinets and their MAC addresses, and it'll show you anything else that's hooked up to the network, right? There's no Lake LMs on the network, even though the Lakes are what we're using for Dante on-ramps into the PA. But they're not showing up in the software. And we're going, where are the Lakes, right? The PA's all there. It's all still there flashing. We're all here. We're all good. Don't know what you just did, but we're all here. But no Lakes. And we're going, what the absolute hell? And so we radio up to Matt on stage, and we said, this is the funniest part. We go, Matt, you gotta recycle the power on the Lakes. We can't see them on the network. They're gone, right? And so Matt's like, you know, holy shit, man. These, you know, as you know, the Lakes don't have a power button. They have a standby button, which means that he's got to get in the back of the rack to be able to cycle the IEC plug to actually shut it off and turn it back on again. And so he did that. He pulled the plugs on the LMs, LM44s, plugged them back in within like 10 seconds. Bloop, bloop. LMs come up in the software. Vic hits the fucking go button again. Pow. PA's back on. We're back in business. So what happened was, for whatever reason, the LMs, the Lake LMs, fell off the network without us knowing. We didn't, you know, obviously there's 56 freaking network connections there just for the full range cabinets. So trying to see two little Lake LM44s in that whole mix of MAC addresses is, you know, is not super intuitive. So what happened was they had fallen off the network, and I still to this day don't know why, but when he pushed the settings to the PA, the settings were expecting to send them the settings to the LM44s because that's what they had been dubbed as the input, right? LM44s. So it shot off the settings, but they didn't go anywhere because there were no LM44s on the network. So it just shot it in the fucking 01 space. And that's what turned the PA off, because it didn't have a destination for the audio inputs. And as soon as the Lakes showed back up again on the network, we were able to repush the settings and get the PA back up and running again. So, yeah, it was just one of those things where you...
Did it bring down the monitor rig as well, or just the front of house rig?
Just the front of house. Yeah, just the front of house. And literally...
And so the band kept playing, and I guess they just did an instrumental. Until you can get the PA back.
Yeah, and huge kudos to those guys, man, like Vic and Matt. Like, I mean, like, talk about sharp as a tack, right? Like, you know the amount of equipment these guys are using and the level at which they're operating and the pressure, you know, we're at 35,000 people and it's Tom fucking Petty, you know? And cool as cucumbers, right? that would have rattled a lot of people's brains for a minute, because, you know, and Vic being able to identify what the problem was and get it right the first time, the lakes are not on the network. And to just run after that, I thought was brilliant. You know, it shit happens, you know, I mean, shit really happens. But in this case, there was no precedent for it, because we had never encountered that issue before. And it wasn't us. It wasn't EAW. It wasn't the network per se. It was the lakes. The lakes fell off the network. The network didn't kick them off. They just disappeared off the network. And honestly, no slag against those guys, but I've never used the lake as an LM44 as an on-ramp ever from that day forward. I've always gone to like Focusrite or something else if I need to do that stuff. I just didn't trust it.
So it wasn't a network failure. It was a failure of a device on the network. And I think this is part of what, like, copper, and I mean actual copper, not what people call copper now, which is a little Ethernet cord. That's not copper. Copper is the 56-channel RAM latch.
Right.
So that's not going to fail unless you run over it with a forklift. And it's just my hang-up with the whole thing. And again, it's not even really your product. I think your product at the end of the chain is actually one of the, based on my looking at it and holding it in my hands, that's one of the most robust, physically capable parts of that kind of infrastructure.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah.
Having addressed the heat thing, I don't really see the end of the chain being much of a potential failure point.
Yeah.
But to use the digital drive, I've got to have a switch in front of house, and then I got to have a switch on stage, and then another switch on the other side of the stage that's fed from the first switch. So I'm introducing all of these potential points of failure that I just don't have in a true analog drive system.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally get it. I mean,
mostly because I want to see the data.
I want to see the data. Yeah. I mean, we all, like I said, at the very beginning of the conversation, we all kind of pine for still just plugging in an NL8 cable or an NL4 cable, you know, because it was so simple and reliable. But the world moves on, you know, and technology moves on. And, you know, I would like to feel like these are easy choices to make. They're not, because as manufacturers, and I was part of that, didn't necessarily make it super simple, did we? You know, and I've talked to other principals of other PA companies, you know, that I'm friendly with, and they have even said themselves, you know, we're not good at networks. And what they mean by that is that that's not their focus. Their focus is to build great speaker cabinets, and their focus is to build great sound systems. And I think that fundamentally every single lecturer who's done network sound systems has approached the networking infrastructure as an afterthought. It's at the very end of the chain, right? And now everybody wants to get the PA out, and everybody wants to get it out, get it moving. And somebody goes, well, has anybody really thought about how people interface with this shit, how they hook it up, how messy is it, how clean is it? You know, has anybody done that? And I had one company principal from a brand say, we're fucking horrible at that shit. You know, and I think that that's where a lot of the fear comes from. You know, this kind of compounded fear that a lot of people have with networks is that it never really was physically addressed right from the get-go. It was a lot of extra cables. There was a lot of head scratching. You know, with Dante, there was always the possibility that you would switch cables and have reverse patches going on, you know, crisscrossing networks and causing all sorts of issues. And there was never really an intuitive approach from the beginning to say, hey, there's no extra complexity here. You know, it's intuitive. You just maybe got to make a couple extra connections, but we've labeled them properly. It's easy. It's repeatable and reliable. I can attest to the reliable part, you know, because I've been around this for a minute. I would never suspect reliability issues by running a network, is what I'm saying. So the simple fact of running a network doesn't put you in any jeopardy. The interconnects of that network are where the problems typically arise, you know, bad connections, bad cables, things of that nature.
Because, you know, technology does move forward. That doesn't necessarily mean it's always moving in a better direction. Just because it's newer doesn't
necessarily. I didn't add that it was better. I said it's moving forward because I'm an old analog guy through and through, and I love my old PAs and my old shit. You know, I mean, I love all that stuff. But as like I said, in 2012, when I was first introduced, I wasn't given any fucking choice. We're going that way. And Robert Scoble will say the same thing. He said to me one day, he goes, you know, sooner or later, you just got to throw yourself at the technology because it ain't stop. It's a train that's not stopping. My point was. Yeah. I mean, but so that was my point.
Interesting that Robert is now over at EAW, you know. So
well, isn't that weird? Yeah. Well, I thought that was a great place for him to land because, you know, he was and still is an ambassador for that group of products. You know, like he put his money where his mouth was. He went out and he toured it and stuff. It was much easier to see him in the walls of EAW than say D&B or Adamson or something. You know what I mean?
Well, I wish him only the best of luck. And I really appreciate what you brought today.
Yeah.
To our Zoom cast. Do you have a website where people can find you?
Yeah. It's just simply truthandaudio.com. And we're doing an overhaul on the site with a bunch of new pictures and stuff. The descriptions are good in kind of explaining what the paradigm, what the ecosystem is. But there's been, you know, advancements and modifications and stuff to the products as we've developed them over the last couple of years. Because we've been field testing these things for like 2 years just to make sure because of you know, Kurt's concerns and Ken's concerns that this shit will do what it's intended to do. I don't want to put something out there that's going to fail your show. Put it that way.
Great. Excellent. Well, listen, we are going to, what we're going to do is say goodbye to those people that are watching us live. Although I believe we had a hiccup somehow in the live, but we recorded the whole thing and we'll be replacing the live feed with the recorded feed. And nobody will be any of the wiser, except I just told you.
So
with that in mind, remember, you know, everything you heard today was an opinion. But before we go, even though we've been on quite a while, does anybody have anything else they want to say before we say goodbye to the live audience and just talk amongst ourselves?
I was just going to say that was great listening today. I quite enjoyed that.
Thanks, Ben.
Listening to Bernie about the, and I had lots of questions, but I wouldn't ask them on the, they'd take too long.
You're going to stay with us and you can ask those questions later, and those people who want you can DM you and find out what your questions were. Unbelievable. So remember what I always say, you make it happen. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but next week is going to be our 200th Zoomcast. 200. Unbelievable. So we'll see you next Wednesday. Just remember, hey, you must be kidding me. Unbelievable. So and with that in mind, remember, you make it happen. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. And again, everything you heard today is opinion, so do your own research. Take care. Be safe. Bye, everybody. And we are off the air.